session number 23378, reel 5.
Helping to with prisoners and setting up the new administration. That didn't concern us very much as a company in an infantry unit. It was more the role of the higher formations. But we were on guard duty around the place. We had periods of leave in Beirut, beautiful city, was untouched by war at that stage. And we were able to savour the good life for a very short period before we were sent into the Tripoli fortress area to go on a defensive position on the border between Syria and Turkey, high up in the mountains, spread out as company units in localities. Winter was starting to come on, it was bloody cold, and we were fed by mules, which we had 43 mules, I think, attached to us from a Maltese muleteer company. And you always wait for the mule train to bring in the supplies and mail. Occasional visits from battalion commander and brigadier. We're digging weapon pits, fully occupied, but it was. One wondered whether, at the time, whether we survived as a company unit, because if we were surprised by a sufficiently strong force. But it didn't happen, and snow began to fall and make conditions fairly difficult.
Had you at this time, as I understand, the Japanese were starting to make a move in places like Indochina. Had you heard anything about them at all? South Indochina, by the 24th of July, 1941.
We heard more about the Germans and the Russians getting entangled. That was of more consequence to us than at that stage, at the end of the Syrian campaign. More consequence to us because that had the possibility of affecting us in some way in the future, providing we were still in the Middle East. We don't think we gave the Japanese much thought of that out there prior to Pearl Harbor.
And what were your feelings knowing that the Germans were now tangling with the Russians?
Well, we were A, surprised, and B, glad that it represented another player. I remember hearing it at that time we were in the mountains, and we wondered whether it was true or it was just a furphy, as they say. It was true enough, and we were pleased.
Had you...
In fact, I felt a sense of relief. I can still visualise hearing the news. Somebody came up to me and said, "Hey, boss, do you hear the news?" I said, "No, what is it, Charlie?" And he told me. I said, "You sure?" "Yes, I am, boss."
How close-knit were you as a company now, at this point?
Oh, very closely knit. We'd been through a baptism of fire, as they say in the good books, and come out of it well. There's a very close bond between us, which is to continue in the years to come. Number 9 section of the 7 platoon, 9 platoon, was to become one of the best decorated sections and platoons in the British forces. Their decorations were remarkable.
Were you aware of the goings on in the Western Desert?
Yes, we heard news of that. We heard news of breakthrough by the Germans. We heard news of the relief of Tobruk. We heard news of Alamein. Yes, we heard the news from time to time, and we're also readers, avid readers of the Palestine Post.
Tell us about that.
It was a daily newspaper published in English. It carried the usual amount of local news and about Jewish personalities and Zionism. And also such limited war news as they could publish after censorship had had their run. Interesting paper, brought round by little Arab boys in the morning. Palestine Post, you like it? It was reading matter, something new. Certainly when mail came from Australia that he might have got a paper published in Australia, but it was stale news by then, although it was of immense interest.
What were some of those things that stuck out in relation to the politics of Australia at the time? Menzies resigns in August, late August 28th, and ultimately Curtin was to become Prime Minister of Australia. Were you concerned about what was going on in Australia to this level?
You always have an interest in politics, but there's a rule amongst the officers, at least, there should be no politics in the mess. In other words, you keep politics on the to yourself, because it can be very divisive. But we needn't have worried, because Curtin was a great Prime Minister, as we now know, as we knew then, especially when we were on our way back from the Middle East and we stood up to Churchill.
I assume up until the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor in December, that you had assumed that you might head off and be used in up the desert, Western Desert.
Yep.
What were the stories of Tobruk that you'd heard? You mentioned the Australian relief. 19th of August, troops were beginning to be relieved from Tobruk.
Well, we've heard stories of the debacle in Tobruk and the subsequent 6-month siege. We were delighted when Tobruk fell again into our hands, because then we heard the stories of the heroic defence of the way the Australians had conducted themselves.
How important was that information to the rest of the Allied forces, do you think, particularly to yourself and the company that you were commanding?
Anything good about Australian forces was of great interest to us and helped to bind us together, although we were miles apart physically. Anything Australian was received with great relish. Might have been a theatre of war with which we were physically unconnected, yet we were Australians abroad. Sense of nationhood.
So what was the feeling then when the Japanese forces were to attack Pearl Harbor on the 7th of December 41? Do you recall that?
Yes, I do. And we were appalled. We wondered what was happening at home. We became very focused on Australia, although we knew we, as a part of the 7th Division, we had a role to, still to play in the Middle East. But as day by day went by and we heard of the Japanese appalling and quick successes in the move southwards, we began to wonder what our next role would be. Each rumour, and there were rumours galore, each little move of personnel put us upon inquiry as to what was going to happen. I can't quote you the odds, but the odds were rapidly becoming in favour of a return to Australia.
How would the Japanese seem?
Well, they were seen as an enemy. Well, their atrocities, apart from what we'd read about Nanking, was it, in 1937, and they chopped the Chinese about a bit. Their atrocities that they committed later on in the Southeast Asia part of the world, and the moves then, of course. But they were regarded as a bloody nuisance, interrupting the war overseas, so to speak, and attacking our homeland. That stirred us. There was an anxiety about the place.
Were you to have heard anything in relation to Curtin's statement that Australia would now look to America? December 27th.
No, we didn't hear much about that sort of thing.
What are the thoughts of the Americans ultimately becoming involved?
Well, we thought it was a good thing that they were becoming involved in the World War II. And the quicker they did it, the better it would be. But we didn't anticipate that they would... We didn't think, I suppose, that they'd be of much help to us down under. We thought that their use would be primarily in Europe. That's what we thought.
Germany and Italy declared war on the United States on the 11th of December. How did that make you feel?
I think the fact that America came into the war with all their might and power and expertise was a good thing. We had a further ally. We weren't alone in the world.
Had you concerned yourself at all about the lack of American presence until this point?
Not really. I don't have to contend with it without worrying about the politics of it all.
I'm interested for you to tell us your understanding of when it was that you began to move, when you knew that you were coming back to Australia.
We were moved out of Syria in the Palestine to a camp at Hill 69. That was amongst a series of camps that were occupied by Australian troops south of Tel Aviv. And we got there soon after Christmas, going into 1942. All sorts of movements of personnel were taking place. We got a new commanding officer, excellent fellow, Colonel Key, a fellow that formed as First World War I veteran, left us. All of a sudden we got an order to move. We moved down to Tewfik, next in Port Said. Even then we didn't know where we were going, because the depths were still, hadn't quite reached Singapore. This would be about mid-January. We knew then, definitely, we were bound for the Japanese theatre of war, but not necessarily home to Australia. We were put on board the Ile de France, the hull of 21 Brigade, and the 2nd and 4th Field Regiment. And in 4 days' time, we were in Bombay.
Fairly quick movement. What was the feeling when you realised that you were going to be facing the Japanese now?
We felt that we were taking steps to defend Australia if eventually they came down as far as here. And we felt better about that. We weren't fighting a war that tended to be remote. Where am I thinking now instead of then? I don't know. It becomes merged.
At the time, how do you think you would have seen that you were going to cope with the Japanese, given their reputation?
We weren't concerned about that at that point of time in January, because their abilities hadn't quite emerged in the frightening way in which they later did. We had a pretty good idea of our own abilities, you know. We thought we were pretty good. We could cope with most things, which is good. I don't think we were skites, or we had an excessive burst of zeal in any way. I think it was a genuine feeling. We could cope with most things. In Bombay, we were marched out to a barracks where we stopped for a while. And on the 30th of January, we got on board a trooper called the City of Paris. I'm wrong on the date, it was the 13th of February.
Mm-hmm. This is only a couple of days before the fall of Singapore would take place.
Yep.
Where were you? Do you recall when you heard the news that Singapore...
At sea. Bound for Java. And we're on a southeast course bound for Java. And the Japs got there first. And I was standing on deck at 8 o'clock in the morning. I can't recall whether I'd just been to breakfast or was about to go to breakfast. And I just paused and looked out over the convoy, spread out on the placid sea, steaming away quietly, destroyers moving about on the flanks like sheepdogs, keeping the convoy in order, sounding their sirens, beep, 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 very busy. But in a few seconds they would have become busier. What happened then was the convoy turned about. That was the stage when Curtin won his battle with Churchill. Australian troops returned home. But the niggling that emerged later between Churchill and Curtin still, when Curtin tried to put us up to Rangoon, we turned about, but we changed course slightly northwards. We were off to Rangoon. And finally Curtin put his foot down, and we went to Colombo backwards to refuel. And for 4 days we fueled our heels in Colombo. And we were to set sail again on the 1st of March 1942, again, still not knowing where we were going. And for 23 days we were at sea, a total of 6 weeks on board ship coming home.
How did morale maintain itself during this long journey?
Remarkably well. We were cooped up a bit. On board the City of Paris was our unit, a number of ordnance men, and we were part of the 2nd 5th AGH. It was all very pleasant. The troops kept themselves busy with some sort of training, some sort of concerts. It was very hot in the blackout conditions, especially at night. You'd sleep on deck as much as you could. You're woken up by native sailors, washy deck, washy deck, and then the first thing you know in the morning, the hose down your throat almost. It was fun. It started to get boring until we thought by now we must be reaching Australia. By the reading of the stars, nobody would tell us. There was an unmistakable smell one day of gum leaves. And as we steamed on, we saw land. That land was Fremantle.
What was the feeling returning home after all this
time? Oh, wonderful. Emotional. The war receded. And in its place came loved ones. Mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, fiancés, girlfriends, wives, children. It all cascaded down. You forgot about the war for a moment. So we were home to Australia after 6 weeks at sea, cooped up. And it was more serious as it transpired. Those loading the ships at Port Tewfik had put our carriers and their transport on a different ship. It didn't reach Australia until the 31st of March. So if we'd been landed anywhere to fight, we only had our weapons that we could carry. It wasn't generally realised at the time, but since she was down this boat, it wasn't the fault of the battalion, it was the fault of the transport people. I suppose the best way they could bundle us all in, get rid of us. However, that didn't become an issue. Fortunately, we But if we'd gone to Rangoon, it would have. If we'd gone to Java, it would have. There was still a chance.
Tell us then, your arrival in Fremantle, what would take place?
Thunderstorm. I remember a tremendous crack of thunder, the lightning striking the mast of the ship. The worst Saturday. Anyway, we spent a few days in Fremantle and we sailed on to Adelaide where we disembarked. It was announced there'd been no leave pending arrangements for where we were to go, and we spent a few weeks in Adelaide. Finally, an announcement was made that we were going to have 7 days leave, and off we went. Had our 7 days leave. Great time.
Can you talk to us a little bit about your 7 days leave? What did that involve?
Well, we all went home to our homes, reunited after October 1940 to March 1942, whatever that adds up to in point of time. It was a matter of anxiety, it was a matter of all the stresses and strains of family life manifesting themselves, people that have died in the meantime or become ill or grown old.
How had you seen the war in relation to its effect on possibly your relatives, friends, family, community?
My own personal ones. I'd been a little bit older, a little bit more anxious. Nevertheless, in good heart. My wife-to-be was certainly in good heart. We had a very happy time together. But hanging over us was the ever-present Japanese who, day by day, hour by hour, were having success.
Had you heard that they had attacked Darwin, for instance?
No. Nor had they heard down here either. One of the best kept secrets of the world. February the 19th. No, we didn't hear. So at the end of 7 days we piled up, got into a train again, off to Glen Innes, New South Wales.
Did you understand or know what your future plan would be? Had you been told anything?
Yes, we were told that we were going to defend Australia, which implied that we were going north in Australia, which in fact, of course, we did. We spent a short time in Glen Innes where we went over to Tenterfield, where we did as much training as we could in reorganisation. And finally, after a few weeks, we were packed off to Yandina in Queensland on the Sunshine Coast, as it later became.
Had there been talk at all about things like the Brisbane Line at this point?
When we got to Yandina and started to dig slit trenches at a place called Nambour, just south of Yandina, north of Brisbane, that it was the locals, and especially were disturbed at pineapples being substituted, or rather, trenches being substituted for their precious pineapples, that they began to be worried. And politically, there was talk about the Brisbane loan, whether that was the right place to defend Brisbane. But the Japs, of course, had indicated that they were going to attack Australia